It's become clear that that such a process needs many supporters, needs leadership to begin with, needs gatekeepers, facilitators, and also change agents, be these students and some sort of skills also to make this transformation happen.
It's a cultural transformation. It's not a single thing. But let me just say also, we are in a state that is recognized around the world as a leading subnational actor in this area. We're in a city where the mayor is the chair of C40, the international group of cities focusing on this. We have extraordinary problems that really have to do with impacts, sea level rise impacts, air emissions impacts, and challenges of equity and justice. We have a very inequitable distribution of wealth and opportunity in the United States, and our city is an example of it. We need to address those issues while we're dealing with the impacts of climate change.
One specific follow-up question, could you give some examples just to make this more tangible? What kind of justice and equity issues exist, and how, maybe also tying this back again to the strategy, how the university can also contribute to this in a positive way?
Okay, there's a macro level issue having to do with transportation. Los Angeles has goals for eliminating fossil fuels in the mobility world. We have a lot of research going on already on transportation, mobility, and urban design. And the university is committing to converting all its everything but its heaviest trucks to EV and all its cars to EV, but also reducing the need for them. So we're also trying to incentivize people to get out of their cars. And by the way, there will be a process soon where the university subsidizes the purchase of EVs by faculty and staff. So that there's that level. But I want to give you, for instance, a research issue that's underway right now, because part of our getting to carbon neutrality by 2028 is going to require offsets. Hopefully everybody understands offsets in the market. Well, we have resolved within the president's working group to say offsets, we understand, but in fact, they don't deal with equity and justice, and they don't deal with our neighborhoods, where there's a great deal of less wealth. And we already have a good neighborhoods program, but there's still, nevertheless, we are in the middle of an urban area of great need. So we have a graduate student team working for the president's working group, doing a study of how we could use the offset dollars that the university is committing to pay someone to reduce the carbon impact of individuals and homes and businesses in our community, for which there's no formal legal offsets certificate program, and simply declare every carbon ton of carbon emissions we reduce through helping those in our neighborhood, we will claim as part of our offset. We are not under any legal mandate to do anything, but we're saying we have a moral obligation, and within that moral obligation, we're going to count as real legitimate offsets those who we can measure and count that result from what we help pay for. That's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great study. The students are very excited. Everybody in the university says, why haven't we thought of that? And the answer has been, well, that hasn't been a legal program. There is no policy for it. We're going to create our own, and hopefully others will say, hey, that's not a bad idea. We will simply do what they're doing. Universities and others will do it. And we will simply say, reducing the footprint of the community that we are within is a legitimate claim as an offset. So that's just an example. That's a student project, mm-hmm. but why they exist? Because they're reporting to the president's working group.
It's amazing. Shows also how those links work and bring something to life, and especially to really look how those offsets can really be bound to specific things, local projects, infrastructure, and
exactly.
value creation in a very broad sense of the word.
One of the examples that have come up in terms of this team's finding, because they've been interviewing people in the community, in terms of what is the wish of those in the community in terms of supporting them? It's not like we're going to go tell them what they have to do. We're going to come and say, well, we'll help you insulate your attic to reduce your need for energy. And they may not, 87% of the people in our community are renters. You know, helping their attic was for 13%, not the other 87. One of the issues, though, has to do with wellness and the fact of nutrition and health. So the students are saying, well, to what extent can we work with a local clinic to change the eating habits, help educate, train, change the eating habits of people in our neighborhood? But actually, food in our particular boundary, which we're looking at, the community around us, the largest footprint from that community is actually from food, by which I mean fast food and the food consumed, the kind of food that's eaten. Why? Because we're in basically a many cases, they call it food deserts in the communities around us. They do not have the luxury to buy green anything, let alone fresh fruit and vegetables. So if we can make an impact on their dietary behavior and eating and make it accessible, they're talking about these students now, not me. The students are saying, well, why wouldn't the university have a good produce market adjacent to campus or even on campus to serve our community and our students? I don't know the answer to that, but they're coming up with these ideas.
One last question. I think you hinted at it already several times, but just to wrap this up, to what extent will this process affect the culture of the university and the immediate environment?
Well, first of all, I'll start with immediate and the neighborhood. You know, we're not always viewed as in positive view by our neighborhood because we want to build, we want to do things, we want the university to have a university. There's always a tension in the neighborhood, okay? This hopefully will help simply partner more so than we have in ways that actually deliver for our neighborhood. Two, when I mentioned culture, we really focus, I have no formal authority in the university. I'm not on the organizational chart. We do not have a budget for the president's working group. I am doing this as a member of the faculty who's contributing my time to this, as well as everybody else. So that except for a little staffing out of the president's office, this is a voluntary organization. Our power comes from commitment, collaboration, coordination, and delivery. So the fact is we are here because there's a request for us to be here from the president and an uptake across the university. But what's coming out of this is a culture of coordination. We have to coordinate. That just hasn't been an imperative in most of the things we've done historically. There has never been a committee that brought together operations, education, research to talk about a single issue that affects everyone. It doesn't exist that way. There hasn't been the need. So I think it's going to change not just, don't look at an organizational chart, although that will change. Look at the cultural change behind the organizational chart, and does it have any real meaning? And that's what we're hoping to accomplish.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mazmanian, for those insights. I think this is very impressive. What you contribute as a person with your experience and what all those different actors involved contribute. And I think there are many things that we can also take away for us for the process we do at the University of Münster. And at this point, I also like to wish you good luck in this process, a lot of success to really push the strategy, the process forward towards sustainability.
Well, you please keep me informed of how you progress. I mean, this isn't just one university. We all need to be thinking this way.
I will. Thank you.
Glad to help. Have a good day.